Okay, this is session number 40, recorded on May 20th, 2007, and it's side one, and I'm going to finish up the quotes from Kroeker that got interrupted at the end of session 39, and it's also these two quotes, or one quote, two paragraphs, are the last quotes in the Kroeker section of my book, and these are from a book called Ideology and Power in the Age of Lenin in Ruins, published by Kroeker and his wife in 1991 by their own press, New World Perspectives, out of Montreal, and they are editors of this collection of essays by various people. And I'm going to read from their preface, written by Mary Louise Kroeker and Arthur Kroeker, which are, these quotes come from page IX or 9 and X, which is 10 Roman numerals in the preface. The quote begins with the word myths, M-Y-T-H-S, and it's in italics. The myths of communism and capitalism, then, as floating signs, degree zero points for the cancellation and imminent reversibility of all the polarities. One, the mutation of the socialist struggle for justice into syndical power, and the materialist dream of the liberal flight from politics into the triumph of syndical ideology. Like strange attractors in astrophysics, which can exercise such a deadly fascination because of their ability to alternate energy fields instantly, and alternate is italicized. The myths of state capitalism and state communism are alternating sides of the rationalist eschatology, : the symptomatic signs of the appearance of the bimodern condition. Bimodern condition in italics. So that's Kroeker's term for a post-postmodern situation. So he says the new situation is bimodern. He says bimodernism, that is the contemporary historical situation in which the great referential polarities instantly reverse fields, changing signs in a dizzying display of political repolarization. A violent metastasis in which all the referential finalities of the political code of the 20th century, capitalism and communism most of all, begin to slide into one another, actually mutating into their opposites as they undergo a fatal reversal of meaning. No longer justice versus the acquisitive instinct, or power versus ideology, socialist history versus consumer simulation, or economic liberalism versus political democracy, but now the instant reversibility of all the reference. A fatal eclipse of the empire of the sign in which capitalism and communism do a big historical flip. Not just the myth of capitalism in desperate need of the communist other in quotes, to sustain itself, or communism as a barrier against the universalization of the commodity form, but now communism aping the economic form of primitive capitalism, economics in italics, and capitalism taking on the political form of the command economy of late communism, and politicals in italics. The capitalist societies, then, is the forward frontier of the communist valorization of power, and communist societies is the last and best of all the primitive capitalisms. In one, the inspiring faith in commercial accumulation and the resuscitation of law of value of the production machine, and in the other, the radical depoliticization of the population, its actual body invasion by a totalitarian image reservoir under the control of a cynical political mandarinate. In one, the recuperation of the productivist myth of Franklin Delano Roosevelt as a policy of economic reconstruction, and in the other, the Leninist use of all the mass organs of media manipulation as a way of coordinating private opinion with the war machine. End of quote. Now, he talks about the new communist society, or Russia, using the myth of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, so LaRouche would be aligned with that, and LaRouche does have a big audience in Moscow. And then the Leninist use of all the mass organs in the capitalist society, present-day capitalist society, would be in the realm of Chomsky or maybe even McLuhan. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's the end of the quotes. So that's Kroeker. Okay, so we've done, after 39 sessions, we've done half of LaRouche, all of McLuhan, all of Thompson, and all of Kroeker, as those writers established themselves up to 92 when I published this book. They all are recycled and change and do different things. from 93 on up to today, which is what we'll go into when we do my chart, which will be our way of doing the quotes from me that are in the book. We'll expand from the chart back into the quotes, from the quotes into the chart. And we're going to go back, we're going to finish up Croker here, and then we're going to go and finish up LaRouche. And while we're doing LaRouche, the second half will hopefully relate to the stuff presented by McLuhan, Thompson, and Croker in relation to LaRouche and in the other direction.
Mm-hmm.
So, to finish up Croker, what is it about Croker that you get from this, and what maybe you want to elaborate it on?
Well, this last week I was reading some of the stuff by Ken Wilber. Have you ever heard of him?
Yeah. And he'd be in the Thompson quadrant of my chart.
Yeah. And he was relating, he was talking about the triune brain model. A lot of people are familiar with the reptilian, limbic, and neocortex.
Right. And the triune is what you said.
Yeah, right. And he sort of relates them to the physical, the astral, and the mental or causal body. And I got to thinking that LaRouche is, because he's pretty much grounded, he's pretty practical. He doesn't care. He has stuff to say, but his main thing is you got to go out and do the work. You got to change physical reality.
That's LaRouche?
Yeah. So
now
I'm
one
thinking
thing about you're saying Ken Wilber, he maps it onto the astral body and the
The three brains.
Right, but he, well, two of them. One is, or he takes all three and maps them onto the...
Well, let me let me quickly say that I think that LaRouche is kind of like the physical brain or the sort
the
of
chemical
the,
body,
the reptilian but. Brain, and Thompson is kind of like the midbrain, the emotional, astral, limbic system brain, and Croker is like the cerebral cortex, which is sort of the mental slash causal body brain. See, I think you got the three. I think you got the triune brain model in your chart, and then McLuhan.
No, you think I do? I mean, I do have those terms in there on the chart.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, but before we get into that, when you bring in the astral or etheric or whatever, the non-chemical models, that is what I call the Thompson quadrant. You're bringing in the belief, perception, modes of experience that are what I call the astral body.
Yeah, but each person is comprehensive. It's just depending on, like you said a while back, they're all dealing with tactility in their own way, and they're all ratios of proportions, but each one has a different emphasis. McLuhan, I see LaRouche as being more, you know, physical nuts and bolts. He's the machine tool guy. And then you have. We skip over McLuhan for a second, and you have Thompson. He's kind of the astral body, spiritual, middle brain, emotional, limbic system guy. And then you got Croker, and he's like the cerebral cortex. He's like the mental body and the sort of the causal body. And then you got, you know.
What about McLuhan?
McLuhan, he's, you know, the tactility. He's the tactility. You know, the interplay of everybody.
Okay, but you're bringing in the Thompson perception of, and many cultures' perception of, a world beyond this chemical body world or Western chemical body.
Well, forget about Thompson for a minute. I'm just talking about I'm just trying to map that these guys map onto your physical brain in a way. And I think that Croker, you're saying, what about Croker? Well, Croker's the neocortex, and that's the mental body merging into the causal body. Well, one explanation I've heard of the causal body is that in the causal body you have effects and you have causes, and they're all floating around. They're not necessarily, you can sort of connect causes and effects, but causality doesn't really exist on that plane. And, you know, here you have Croker talking about flipping causality around he's very sort of, he's not really plugged into the machine tool reality of LaRouche. He's sort of in the mental sphere of, you know, abstract ideas, very abstract ideas.
Okay. I'm going to show you how I've categorized them using the astral body model, which is like the theosophical body, the theosophical model, the idea that you got a etheric body, a mental body, a causal body, and an astral body, right? They come from Blavatsky or the Theosophical Society.
Mm-hmm.
That's from the end of the 19th century.
Yeah, but see, we didn't know a lot about the brain back then. It wasn't, I don't think Blavatsky really mapped those categories to the physical brain. I think Gurdjieff did.
Right, but the thing is, I wouldn't map those people, unless I was in the Thompson Quadrant, I wouldn't map those bodies onto LaRouche because he doesn't acknowledge those categories.
Yeah, well,
neither does McLuhan or Croker.
Yeah.
So you're
the brain is an objective hunk of, you know, meat and circuitry and like that, and I think it's okay to do that regardless of to map them on there, regardless of who acknowledges what. They just sort of loosely fit into these categories or compartments that the brain evolved into.
Okay, here's what I did. You just laid out your categories, taking the astral body model, and I put different...
I'm saying biochemical model. I'm talking about the physical brain.
Why would you say the middle brain is the etheric body or whatever?
No. Actually, if we're going to refer to Thompson says the reptilian brain is the etheric body. But,
right. So he doesn't agree with Wilbur.
No, he does. No. There's not a disagreement with Wilbur. I'm saying the astral body, which is more of your emotional body. It's your out of, you know, it's the place where you're traveling in the bardos. That's maps more to the limbic system in the middle brain.
Well, why? And the cortex is the causal body?
Yeah, it's the mental and merging into the causal body. Because it's
okay.
Just pure abstract, it's an abstract realm. It merges into kind of like the formless dimension. It also maps to waking, dreaming, and deep sleep. Waking being your sort of reptilian base brain, dealing with your hands and feet and your physical body. Your limbic system is more where you're going into the dream state. You're sort of disembodied, but you're still in the world of form, but form is mutable. Then you go into your deep sleep state, where you're going into formless, abstract, mathematical dimensions, like that.
Okay, so what I have, and these are in the second column on the left, on the Synochronous Bob's Tiny Note Chart, taking those terms.
Also, just let me interrupt real quick, because I just want to add this one flavor to what I'm saying. And base brain, time is very real. Time and space are very real. When you move into the limbic or the astral brain, time and space become very mutable. And when you move into the cerebral cortex, time becomes almost acausal. Like I say, causes and effects are floating around. They're not, but cause and effect doesn't really rule the day anymore.
Okay, so taking those terms from Theosophy, I have for LaRouche quadrant, and this is under Eloy, which is the second column to the from the left on the tiny note chart.
Mm-hmm.
We heard what you call mental body. I have LaRouche's mental body, McLuhan is causal body, Thompson is etheric body, Croker is astral body, and me as physical body.
Mm-hmm.
So my interpretations of those metaphysical, theosophical categories is different than yours.
Right, because you're not really going off the Thompson model.
You know, this is the Thompson's reality projected into the chart.
Yeah.
And so that I have my reasons for calling LaRouche mental body, because he is near the newspaper. And my definition of the mental body is an abstracted visual space conceptual world. But you call the mental body out of Wilbur the formless?
Yeah. Well, you know, the mental, astral, and physical are embodied in each of the three brains as well. So it's a matter of, ratio of portions among, portions. So, you can do that.
Okay. And then I have McLuhan as causal body because he deals with formal causality, and Thompson as etheric body because he deals with the realm that is... Oh, I forgot to say. So because McLuhan is in the electric media situation, the speed up of electric media allows people to see causes. not all the causes, but begin to see patterns of change. So that's why I call him the causal body. Thompson is called the etheric body because he's in the quadrant of the retrieval of the printed book values. So that's not completely the newspaper, but it's etheric and personal and maybe dreamlike. And the book is an extension of one's private dream life. And then Croker's called the astral body because he's in the retrieved movie quadrant. And so the movie contains all time and spaces, or all media, as a form. That's what McLuhan said. So I said, well, Croker is astral because the astral body contains all time and space, you know, the Akashic Records.
Right.
And then I called myself the physical body because I'm talking about a new physical body, or the anthropomorphic physical, which we refer to as the Akasha, or the new kind of chemistry, or a new kind of mixture of all the other four bodies that creates a new kind of experience. So that's why I put physical body in my quadrant.
Yeah.
So that's different how I would see.
Well, like Wilbur says, you know, each level contains all the levels. So you're just looking at it from a different level. You're just doing it in a different distribution, and that's fine, because we're going to be going into your chart. So that's how we'll discuss it.
Right. So when you brought up the Wilbur thing, I just wanted to say that I had done that using the theosophical categories, and claiming that's the, or relating that to the function of Thompson in the chart. But to map the, to say that the three brains are concretizations of the three occult bodies is limited from my view, because it doesn't include the media analogates or media analogs.
Well, that's what's new about Bob knowledge. So
right.
All these other guys, except Mark McCohen, aren't, well, I don't know. The guys in the esoteric and traditions and so on don't take that into account. You're right.
Right. It's just that, but limiting yourself to astral body category, well, occult categories like Wilbur does, that is doing what Thompson, what I symbolize Thompson doing.
Right.
And that's the Thompson quadrant. Okay, so that's why I'm saying Wilbur is in the Thompson quadrant, because he doesn't include the media analogies or form.
Right. Well, he does, but it's probably too complex to go into. I'd say he's in the interval between Thompson and Croker, to be honest with you, because he talks about postmodernism and he gets into the effects of the interplay of media into all of these dynamics.
But Thompson does that too.
Uh huh.
He talks about the postmodern writers, not in detail, but he maps them into his model.
Right.
Now, if you look at the top of the chart, you have a string of terms, five terms across the top: sacrificial TV, crash TV, disciplinary TV, surveillance TV, and experimental TV. Now, they're in the five quadrants, or they relate to the five quadrants, so that the...
Well, you can't say five quadrants. Quadrants implies four.
No, there's five quadrants.
A quadrant is a four. A quad is four.
That's all right. Well, the quadrant is a section. The five and the four merge. Didn't I explain that before?
Well, maybe.
The difference between five and four is...
It seems like the word quadrant when you're applying to five, because you usually refer to the five as pentatic.
Right. But the merger, the fifth, is hard to distinguish from the four.
Yeah, it's kind of the synergy of the four quadrants.
Yeah, that's right. So that's why I call them five quadrants. So one will ask, what do you mean by that? So then I can point out that I do mean that, even though it's contradictory on the literal level.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, anyway, so the LaRouche newspaper etheric body is sacrificial TV. The McLuhan electric media causal body is crash TV. The Thompson printed book etheric body is disciplinary TV. The Croker astral body movie is surveillance TV. And the Dobbs physical body magazine / satellite, that's the media or the forms in my zone, are experimental TV. So I'm not going to go into any more about that, but that's also, I would include, that's the Croker categories. Those are categories from Croker mixed in with the Thompson categories.
Right.
And the McLuhan categories.
Right.
And the LaRouche categories. Okay, so let's go back to Croker.
All right.
That was a digression, but you wanted to bring up this Ken Wilber model, and you're mapping his...
No, I'm just contrasting Croker to the other guys. LaRouche is machine tools. He's physical hands, nuts and bolts, you know. And
well, that's similar to Croker. That's why I call him dialectical materialism.
Croker is, you know, see, LaRouche is looking for salvation in the physical world. He's like Christ incarnating into the flesh, you know. He's like, okay, we're in the flesh, let's make the flesh work. Thompson is more hanging out in, you know, salvation for the emotional body and the astral bardos or something.
Yeah.
You know, so they are
and
different.
And where's McLuhan looking for salvation?
Well, McLuhan is Catholic, but he's just pointing out that everybody's disappeared. He's saying, I have empathy for the reason why you don't have a body, you know, because you've disappeared. So he's pointing out the problem, but he's not the machine. He's not saying, okay, so, you know, start up, fire up the lathe and fire up the, you know, and put your hands to work.
Okay, so... Now, they're both dealing with, Croker and McLuhan are both dealing with physical reality, as you say the LaRouche is dealing with. They just think that the software reality is a dominant form of physicality that subsumes the older form of physicality that LaRouche deals with.
Yeah, but they are talking heads in a way, and LaRouche is saying, okay, roll up your sleeves, we gotta eat, so let's go produce food.
Yes, and he does not he's not Aristotelian. He doesn't think that going to work is based on your sensory life. It includes the sensory life, but he thinks conceptualizing and thinking new patterns and discoveries that can be translated into viable experimental laboratory evidence that then leads to better technology.
Well, that's the weird thing about LaRouche. He's not an empiricist, but he practices science.
Right, but it's an eccentric, idiosyncratic form of science that nobody else would recognize as science. I remember in the 70s there would be occasional scientists who get interested in the LaRouche group because they were pretty energetic and up-to-date in a lot of things, and they would then eventually leave the group and say, I had no idea. I couldn't figure out what their scientific method was about. They couldn't put their finger on it.
Well, he liked Kepler, didn't he?
Ooh, LaRouche,
yeah. No, so Kepler was into, like, the harmony of the spheres. Like, there was this, like, this logoic intelligence behind, you know, he's probably...
That was his version of ecology.
Yeah, and then you think about, you know, and he was into Plato, and Plato thought that, you know, that the realm of, you know, that God was outside time and space, that he had a divine plan in the world of the ideals, and that you could intuit rationally, you could intuit God's rationale... through intuition, and then you would know what to do because you'd know what the divine plan was, and you could go to work and implement God's plan. Now, the Aristotelian is different. He's saying, I can't intuit anything. I need to observe the world.
No, wait. You're saying this is what Aristotle says, or what LaRouche says Aristotle says?
Well, I'm saying this is my interpretation of Aristotle.
Oh, okay.
Aristotle's the empiricist guy who's saying he can't intuit anything. Well, actually, this isn't true because he was into God and intuition, but he was beginning to initiate the scientific movement of the empiricist who says, look, I can't intuit anything. I just need to look through my senses, make objective observations, measure this, measure that, put two and two together, and build, you know, build the knowledge from the ground up. Because knowledge doesn't come, you know, it's not already, the blueprint isn't available already in my, you know, intuition. And, you know, I mean, LaRouche, I guess, is in a sense practicing both. I mean, you have to be an empiricist. You have to make empirical observations to practice science at all. But LaRouche believes that you can intuit the divine, and so he has this method of doing that by going for the higher hypothesis, you know, intuiting God's divine plan or rationale or the logos through this method of the higher hypothesis.
Right. Now, the thing about LaRouche is he says, the problem with the Aristotelians is they categorize their data and their evidence, and then they say, that's what we know. LaRouche remains in the I don't know level, and says, let's keep going, and what we seem to know now is not the end. We got to keep going in this process of becoming, moving towards being, or what he calls a higher hypothesis, which is an ongoing discovery.
Well,
so the difference with LaRouche is that he doesn't believe in categorizing things and having people memorize categories and say, okay, this is what we know.
No, but he just puts the emphasis. You still have to memorize and categorize to practice science. It's just the emphasis is different.
No, he doesn't. LaRouche's method is not really to memorize, but to have the students redo all the experiments that were done over the last 3,000 years.
And experience for themselves.
Yeah, rediscover the stages of discovery.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's, he doesn't, he's not into the...
So he's not as, he's not the same, he's visual space, but he's more vertical visual space rather than like lateral.
Well, he's not even visual space, he's oral, because it's an ongoing process.
Uh-huh.
Science is a process of discovery, and that's probably why the scientists couldn't figure out what the scientific method was. The ones that visited LaRouche were infiltrated on behalf of the CIA or whatever, and they were looking for visual models of data classification, which would come out of their own Aristotelian training, even though they wouldn't call it Aristotelian, they'd call it the empirical method. So what's interesting about McLuhan, Thompson, LaRouche, and Croker is that they are anti the normal educational procedure of the 20th century of classification and memorization and regurgitation.
Yeah. So if you go to McLuhan's, if you go to LaRouche's college, it's not going to be the same as going to
They have different goals in what the change in educational indoctrination would arrive at.
Yeah. And I agree with LaRouche. I mean, if you know, I never really was all that handy at figuring out the math of figuring out math and vectors and physics.
You mean the algebra? Which
yeah, the algebra and the... Yeah. The
which he doesn't like too much.
Yeah, because...
Were you any good in geometry?
I was much better at geometry and spatial relations, yeah.
Yeah, so that's why he's like the LaRouche school.
Yeah, because I mean, the algebra stuff, you know, you got to figure out how to make it... You know, in a sense, you have to prove this stuff in your brain. And LaRouche is saying, no, prove it. You know, go out and see it for yourself, how it actually works, and then think it through.
So, yeah, we have the situation where you would go to LaRouche school, but you'd be confronted in your own experience and with the students around you, and the LaRouche Institute would be confronted with this endless radio and TV and Internet data coming in from the, quote, outside world, talking about the latest interesting to talk show or entertainment capsules or new intriguing baseball games to go to, or sports, and all the entertainment complex would be interfering with the study.
Yeah.
And so then you go over to McLuhan School to learn how to study the patterns of and causes of that entertainment military complex so that you wouldn't be maybe as distracted. And then you go back and do LaRouche's program. But at the same time, you'd have people going into psychic states of distress because they weren't confronting their etheric body, their astral body, and their fear of death. So you have to go to the Thompson School to deal with the soul issues or private civil consciousness, whatever you want to call that part of humans that think or imagine or hope there's something more, and they need a purpose in relation to that world beyond this world, and they get into neurotic states dealing with it.
Yeah.
So you go to Thompson, do some yoga, and confront your fear of death and experience other esoteric zones, then you could come back and study LaRouche because you also have McLuhan's handle on the externalization of the central nervous system all around you, or what he says is the externalization of our unconscious.
Right.
So you're in a simultaneous spinning is awake type environment that McLuhan keeps X-raying as a problem for interrupting the LaRouche school as well as the Thompson thing. Then you realize, if you're living now over the last 15 years, that the chip world, the Internet world, has merged all the media, and the McLuhan sensory models don't work because you're up against this chip body landscape, which, as you describe, is abstract, fractalized, and anamorphic.
And outside, and it doesn't have the rules of the causality of time and space. Effects and causes can be mixed and matched, and there's no, you know...
Well, look at it this way. The Croker is describing the Android meme, which is presenting all this information and entertainment military complex patterns that aren't for you. McLuhan was trying to protect the students because they would interpret that the media was designed for them and addressing them with messages. The croaker comes in and says, no, none of the information complex is even talking to us. It's talking in its own sphere. And so that really makes the student who's sitting there trying to study as LaRouche rather distracted by the fact, well, what world would I translate anything that I learned from LaRouche into? Since it's canceled, remember Croker's terms of cancellation, every day is canceled by the Android meme's hyper-panic action.
Yeah. But LaRouche is a Platonist Christian, so he's trying to bring the spiritual dimension. He's trying to remind you that the spiritual dimension is there. He's just saying...
But Thompson would say, yes, it's there, but you wouldn't handle it through esoteric or Catholic Church Christianity. You'd do it through the esoteric Buddhist or the cult forms.
See, actually, I'm thinking now when McLuhan says, I empathize with you because you have no body, you have no identity, you don't know who you are, I think now that McLuhan was saying that the electronic environment disappeared your soul. And so that's why he went to Mass every day, because he was trying to retrieve the soul.
No, that's a good point. I don't know if I discussed this in the McLuhan section when we were doing it, but... there are a few essays where McLuhan goes into the effect of the phonetic alphabet at the time of the Greeks and how it did take the collective psyche, which was a god or a mythic term, mythological term, and then privatize it into this visual space artifact called the psychological, the mental, and the soul. And he suggests that the whole Christian enterprise comes out of the phonetic alphabet. If we didn't have that, we wouldn't have a private soul. So yes, McLuhan would agree with you that that's part of his... concern.
Yeah. The thing I don't get about the phonetic alphabet in Greece is that in Greece they had the Greek alphabet, which was a derivative from Hebrew, and I don't understand where the phonetic alphabet even comes into Greece.
Oh, no, the phonetic alphabet, as McLuhan meant, is that the Greeks added the vowels. They separated the vowels out. They emphasized A, E, I, O, U out of the normal previous mixture of consonants and vowels, and it was almost more consonantal.
And that was a composite part of the Greek alphabet.
Yeah, that was the five vowels that created this, because the vowels and the consonants were within a flow, like a page of Finnegan's Wake, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
When you sort of solidified and abstracted the vowels out of the stream and mix of the consonants,
mm-hmm.
that's the beginning of an abstract visual effect.
Well, that's really interesting.
Yeah, and you can read Havelock on this, or read the book McLuhan did with Bob Logan called Alphabet, Mother of Invention. They go into those details.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people wouldn't believe that.
Yeah.
But you have to look at the effect of the alphabet on the tribe and on previous media and the complex, what I call a meme. And on that level, it may be true.
Right.
Because you'd find it very hard to convince somebody that the vowels made them have a soul. Or have an idea of a soul. It'd be very hard individually, perceptually, to believe it.
Saying that had something to do with fractioning the eye out from the sensory matrix and creating the visual space.
Yeah,
idea.
Within the corpus.
The visual space idea of the soul.
Say that sentence again.
The visual space idea of the soul.
Is
when the eye gets fractioned out.
Yes.
You have visual space, then you can conceptualize the soul in a way you can isolate it from, you know, you become Gnostic because you've separated it out from the whole.
Yeah, but
I have a body and I have a soul. Before that, you were a body soul.
Yes, but no, you weren't even a body soul. You were a collectivity. There was no private individuation. It's the individuation effect that the phonetic vowel result.
Right, so it precipitates the individual soul.
Yes, and so that's right, not the collective soul. And we don't even know if the word soul could be applied to the pre-phonetic alphabet collectivity.
Mm-hmm.
So the interesting thing is it'd be very hard today to convince some of that because everybody's been phoneticized and they think they're an individual. But let's imagine that people were the same all through thousands of years, and we'll call that the private little conscious. It'd be hard to believe that. They find it hard to believe that...
Well, you know what, the myth...
Well, let me finish it. They find it hard to believe that that their sense of their self was created by the phonetic alphabet. So what McLuhan is talking about, when he talks about the book is an extension of the eye, and it raises up your visual gradient as opposed to the auditory and suppresses the tactile, think of that as affecting whatever you want to call the environment of speech and clothing and communication that people had at the time of Greece. Let's call it a meme, a collective environmental effect. And over time, hundreds of years, the language adapts to the phonetic effect, and then people actually collectively think of themselves as having a private soul. So what McCool is describing is that the sense of the individual is an effect, and that the collective soul, the collective organ or meme, is ongoing, but visual space people do not think they're part of a collectivity anymore, even though the effect of the phonetic alphabet is an effect on the collective, quote, soul.
You know what I think your soul was before you had an individual visual space soul? It was the myth of Gilgamesh and the myth of Homer. That's what you identified with.
But that's still writing. You're beginning to get the writing effect.
Yeah, but you don't have the vowels.
Well, what about Well, what was before them? Before writing?
Well, then you have agriculture, and before that you have archaic, you know, hunter gatherer.
Agricultural is the Homeric, is within the route of the
writing
world.
Beginning. So then, you know, before that you have the hunter gatherer.
Yeah, the Paleolithic. What is their sense of individuality or of the sacred or whatever?
I don't know. Maybe it's the tribe.
Yes, and you know what it is?
What?
They don't believe that they are sitting in a cosmos. They believe through their rituals and dances that they must make the cosmos every day.
Yeah.
So there's a collective making going on in pre-literate societies, and that is a very participatory, non-individuated, collective version of sacred and or sacrality.
Right.
Now, McLuhan says we've retrieved that very primitive Paleolithic condition today when people turn on their media every day, you know, since radio, the electric medium, the collective effect of radio, not a movie, not a newspaper, but the radio and then television, that engaging with the information environment and participating in it every day to find out what the news is or see what the talk shows are saying, that is what people subliminally have retrieved.
They've retrieved the making of the cosmos. Yeah, dreaming the world into being.
Yes, but it's not an abstract visual space form of dreaming. It is a participatory, multi-sensuous form of dreaming.
Yeah.
You know, dreaming awake.
Right.
Dreaming. Because literate people, they call it dreaming asleep.
Right.
But the tribal people don't think they're asleep. They're just totally involved.
Yeah. When the Aborigine goes into the dream time, he's not going unconscious. He's going into the alternate space.
Going through metamorphoses,
yeah.
Which would be a literate term from Ovid's poetry, that book he wrote called Metamorphoses, which is him romanticizing the period before writing, before the phonetic alphabet, when people did change form.
Mm-hmm.
But Ovid, the literate person at the time of Jesus, approximately, is when Ovid lived, he is a literate person thinking of these metamorphoses, and it's hard for him to put himself back into that participatory mode.
Yeah.
But the people that he's describing, or the mythic world of dreaming awake, is what you're referring to. That's a sensibility that Ovid would not have any access to.
Yeah.
But we're retrieving that today. That's the revolutionary post-anthropological point McLuhan's making.
Croker's post-literate, but he's not necessarily a retrieval of the pre-literate. He's post-literate and post-pre-literate.
He's post-human. Yeah, he talks about the end of the human, all he's talking about, as we've done before, catastrophe and the end of the world, right?
Yeah.
It's post-human because the machine has taken over. He has a lot in his writings in the 90s, which I don't have quotes from, describing how the machine uploads and downloads the chemical body and takes on a life of its own.
Mm.
And that the chemical body was just the pollen, the flower pollen for the bee of technology, to mutate into something in its own scale.
Right.
So, yeah, you're right. There's the difference, is that LaRouche is trying to recover a certain human cultural values. Thompson says, well, let's not just limit it to the physical. Let's include the esoteric and other dimensions. And McLuhan's saying, well, we've already got a problem if we're going to implement LaRouche's program when we have this environment information distracting the kids. Mm-hmm. And then Croker says, well, why study anything that humans created? Mm-hmm. Since technology's taken on a life of its own, we got to deal with the lineaments and contours of the android meme or of the chip body or of the post-human.
Mm-hmm.
There's the difference, right?
Right.
So Croker says, we don't need to train the human chemical bodies that are left over. We need to save them.
Mm.
And it looks like we ain't going to do it because
mm-hmm.
we moved into the post-human.
Right.
But McLuhan would say, Mr. Croker, the post-human is just an effect of the chip technology. It's not a post-human environment. It is something that we could turn off. It's an extension of us. So that's where Croker differs with McLuhan. He says the media are not extensions of us. They actually used us and then turned back and swallowed us up and dispensed with us.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas McLuhan said, no, they're extensions of us. Therefore, we made them. We can control it.
Right.
And LaRouche was saying, no, we need to retrieve the human scale, or maybe not even retrieve it. We haven't even become human yet. We must build on the Renaissance, the American Revolution, and the values of literacy, even though LaRouche would not limit it to literacy, and make better technology that then will make us finally human beings.
Mm-hmm.
Thompson says, no, we're over. I'm getting ready to live on the astral plane.
Yeah, and mutate, and the astral plane is going to mutate into something entirely different as a function of all of this technology.
Right. So the Thompson.
He thinks it's going to. I remember him saying he thinks it's going to mutate into music, that it's going to become musical. That's the next stage.
Yeah. So Thompson is in between Croker, McLuhan, and LaRouche.
Mm-hmm.
He's saying, yes, the history of consciousness and its literate products are important to prepare you for the changes that consciousness is going to go into, because the singularities consciousness went through before, parallel and McLuhan, caused by different media environments, has now converged into a post-human situation, which is creating a singularity that includes the astral body and changes the astral body, and that is...
And that astral body will then incarnate back into flesh and change this world.
Yeah, I don't know if he says it incarnates back into flesh.
Well, yeah, I think he says it's like a new, the theosophical idea, it's we're forming a new root race, and that new root race will incarnate a new civilization, and the civilization will be made of music.
He might say that, but he also might say that we're not going to reincarnate into the flesh that we have, the models that we have.
Right, yeah, no, those models will
There'll be a new kind of flesh.
Demolished, yeah.
So that's partly what the Dobbs Quadrant talks about, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's new physical reality.
Yeah.
So sometimes Thompson is very close to what Dobbs is saying.
Yeah. Well, Akasha is the alchemical matter that spans all the dimensions, I guess.
Right. And what the... So then Thompson says that we're approaching a singularity that's immeasurable and includes the digital and the silicon, and but also affects the astral. Croker doesn't go that far. So he absorbs Croker by invoking another flame.
Mm-hmm.
Not a post-human, but maybe it's a kind of a spiritual post-human.
Yeah.
Whereas Croker is talking about a technical post-human.
Yeah, he thinks the silicone chip is going to win.
The
silicone body versus the carbon body, the solid-state body is going to win.
So you have Croker on the same side as LaRouche in my book, on the left-hand page, because Croker is dealing with the chemical body but updating the chemical dimensions.
Oh, yeah.
And LaRouche wouldn't agree with that. Now, Thompson is on the McLuhan side because they both talk about a spiritual level as Catholics, and Thompson as a Buddhist, former Catholic. They talk about the spiritual dimension, which is a bit different than LaRouche's, and not at all like Croker, who's emphasizing the evolution of the chemical body
mm-hmm.
into the chip body.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're trying to get back to Croker and review Croker a bit, but maybe this has been a way of croaking on Croker, choking on him, and relating him to the other people.
Yeah, that's the only way to really do a review.
Well, let me just take a Croker quote then. With that in mind, and we've established that Croker's talking about the post-human.
Mm-hmm.
So if I just open at random, let's see. find something like this. He goes, what is the Panic Encyclopedia? This is on page 98 of my book. What is the Panic Encyclopedia? It's a frenzied scene of post-facts for the end of the millennium, Here, even the alphabet, there's the alphabet effect. Here, even the alphabet implodes under the twin pressures of the ecstasy of catastrophe and the anxiety of fear. He's saying humans are so enraptured in this post-human effect that they enjoy their own annihilation now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, self-mutilation. Who was that guy you said who kind of brought on the tattooing? He was that...
Genesis Peori.
Yeah, I mean, he was sort of like doing self-mutilation as art form.
Right. And so because the chemical body has not been totally sloughed off, Kroger would say, it's still there as a small component that the android meme exploits so they can evolve. That little leftover of the chemical body that's still there, Kroger sees as replaying its own death and enjoying it all the time. So he says that the twin pressures, the alphabet implodes under the twin pressures of the ecstasy of catastrophe and the anxiety of fear. Yeah. Well, there's the fear of the post-human.
Well, remember, McLuhan talked about the electronic extension of central nervous system. He referred to it as the prince of the air, giving it sort of a anthropomorphic, demonic oversoul.
Antichrist.
Yeah, but a kind of an oversoul quality. And this is, but Croker's saying the oversoul is technological.
Yeah, and is already won.
Yeah.
Though Croker does, in a way, retrieve the humanist impulse because he thinks there may be a way of bypassing and using the android meme. That comes in his 90s talk.
Yeah.
He thinks there's an escape hatch, so to speak.
And then you say now, in the 21st century, he's actually transcended that whole fear and he's moving into back.
Not transcended.